This is an ABC podcast.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
28 women have been killed in Australia since the beginning of the year. That's more than one every week. The Chief Justice of the Family Court of Australia today has been talking about the fact that the situation is getting worse and that men need to step up and need to do more to prevent it. And there's a summit being held today to discuss what can be done. But in the meantime, and as always, band-aid solutions are being thrown around and actually taken quite seriously by some women. A Victorian MP has said that women should be allowed to carry capsicum spray. Myself and other women I know have had personal body alarms being marketed to us at quite an alarming rate on our social media feed. I know of a woman who got a dog so she could go running. I know that women are signing up for self-defence classes. And I don't know a woman who doesn't place the car keys in between her fingers like a weapon when they're walking to their car in the dark. Or maybe you call a friend, a partner, or a parent when you feel unsafe walking in the dark, using the phone as a signal to the person that you're potentially worried about, saying, if you attack me, then someone will hear. Someone is listening. So women are considering these band-aid solutions. They're arming themselves with devices already. So does it make us safer? Good morning. My name's Rochelle Hunt, your co-host this morning. Warwick Long, of course, host of The Country Hour and joining you from ABC Shepparton. We know they're band-aid solutions, right? But like band-aids, do they serve a purpose?
This comes down to so many of the topics we talk about, right, when we're talking about how to solve a problem. And in our society, and to a huge part of our society, particularly areas like regional Victoria right now, with a lot of the headline stories over the last couple of months, there is no bigger issue right now. You need to look at everything. There is no sometimes simple way to solve any problem. So looking at everything can be a good thing because people... well-meaning people want to be able to do more. So how do you do that? We're going to talk about some of those things together today. But, Rochelle, you know, we have to always set, I think, when we talk about violence against women, which is why I'm actually happy to be here with you today, is overwhelmingly in a lot of ways when we're defining the problem, we're defining the problem of what men, the vast majority, are men doing to women. So it's a men's problem too, which is why I'm happy to be here as well. And when we're talking about what a lot of our discussion is going to be, which is when you're out and about and, you know, hearing you, how you put your keys in between your fingers and, you know, all things that don't go through my mind when I'm walking to the car park late at night. I got back late from Melbourne last night from an ABC broadcast. I was here by myself, didn't even worry me. And that's, therein lies a lot of the problem too, right? But I think we do also need to recognise that statistically, more women, and from what I've been reading anyway, more women are likely to die in the home than anywhere else, which is very confronting as well when we talk about violence against women as well. So will we solve problems today? No. Will we talk about some of the solutions where things can be made better? Well, that's the hope, isn't it?
And it's hard to know the difference too between what actually helps, what does make you safer, what is just being sold to you at the moment. I mean, the fact that these personal alarms are coming up at a fast and steady rate through my social media stream, and it wasn't until I mentioned it in the office that there were a handful of women that said, oh my God, I'm being marketed the same thing. So there's a reason why this particular company is starting to push their products to women. Do they help?
And I don't get those ads.
No, of course you don't. Yeah. That's right. Do they help? Maybe not if something happened to you. But do they help you step outside the door and go for a run when maybe you're thinking twice about it? Maybe they do. A woman who we're going to speak to later today has been working in self-defence and has been working in the area for a really long time. And when an awful, awful incident happens and when it's spoken about publicly, she does get more calls. She does receive more calls. Women are wanting to do something. So today we're going to look at what is the difference between a band-aid and what actually helps. Do they help us? Do they protect us? Or do they simply just give us the confidence to go about our lives without fear?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour
on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Good morning, Rochelle Hunt here with you in Melbourne. Your co-host this morning, Warwick Long, of course, host of the Country Hour and joining you from ABC Shepparton. Text here from Diet says, walk early in the morning at first light or at night. I always take the dog, a Doberman, and I always feel safe. And I know of a woman who bought a dog was just so she could go running.
Yeah, and you see that a lot. I'll often take our family pet out for a wander, and you know, we didn't buy our little black cocker spaniel to make me feel safe, but you see a lot of large dogs being used for that purpose. And when we're talking a lot about this today, feeling safe seems like a basic right, doesn't it? And all of these tactics we were talking about is about trying to feel safe so you can experience society, experience our cities, experience our regions, experience life.
Joining you in the studio, Nicole Calms, Associate Professor in the Department of Design and Founding Director of the Monash University XYX Lab, which looks at and leads national and international research in gender and place. Nicole is also the Associate Dean of Research for the Faculty of Art, Design and Architecture at Monash. Nicole, you and I'm going to say unfortunately, as much as I love spending time with you and your work, but unfortunately you and I have been discussing issues like this on and off, I reckon, for about a decade.
I think you're right. Absolutely.
It doesn't change, does it? Or are we making changes? Because when I look back to things like, should women be allowed to legally carry capsicum spray? Some of the research goes back 20 years. There'll be articles, and it all depends on what has happened to a particular woman at that time. What changes are being made in terms of our personal safety?
Well, I think actually you're right in terms of it feels very much like it's the same story that is being reiterated that we're continually talking about. And I think that what is changing is we're getting a more fulsome picture about the kind of behaviour change that women are making every day and all the time in terms of trying to keep themselves safe. And when I'm hearing the conversation this morning, I'm thinking about the tension between what feels like a society that's very much out of control in terms of violence against women and women wanting to be in charge of their own lives. And so, therefore, we are turning to mechanisms that try to make us feel safe. And so those things could be anything from what we wear when we go out into public, the ways that we travel, the times of day that we choose to be out in the world, the ways we might use public transport or buy a car. All of these things, they're all about mitigating risk and trying to have agency in public realm. So I think we're getting a better picture.
I know, but I actually had a physical reaction then. Even when you say things like we think about what we wear, I hate the fact that we think about what we wear when we go running, but we do.
Mm-hmm.
I hate the fact that we think about what carriage we sit on public transport, depending on what time of the day, and how we go. Our brain goes and looks at every single person that's on the carriage and figures out whether we step on, step off, or step to the next one. But we do
all the time.
Does it help
in public? Well, I think that it's about trying to feel in charge. And exactly what you're saying, does the digital app allow us to go out in public space? I mean, this conversation about dogs, that was one of the biggest things that came out of our research in the Victorian Your Ground project, was just how many women had purchased dogs so that they could feel safe to exercise in public space.
Nicole, we're talking about it more, but has anything sort of largely changed in either how we are talking about it or what were you doing to make women feel safe in public areas?
Well, my research, you know, my background is in architecture and urban design, and definitely we now see here in Victoria there is a range of audits and approaches that describes what I would say is gender-sensitive urban design. So this is about the materials of public space, but that's not addressing the behaviour. I think that maybe there's slightly more funding, but it's not going anywhere near what we need to understand violence against women. And so when I think about change, I think about conversations like this, which demonstrate more active engagement with the issue. I think about things like the data that we now have that helps us understand how many women are sexually harassed, sexually assaulted, experiencing violence all the time and every day. But in terms of change, that I don't think is such a great story.
This Rishan Warwick, your intro resonated with me so much. I have all the same thoughts and experiences, and now I'm having to explain to my 10-year-old daughter why she can't go walking alone with me in the same places that her dad can. And another text that just says, these are things that everybody does. Would you agree with that? I guess I put that to you, Woz, and I put that to you, Nicole. Does everybody, do you carry your car keys in your hand like a shiv?
No, Woz? No. That was new to me. And talk about physical reaction. When you're talking about that, Rochelle, I'm like, you know, you go, wow. Like, and immediately I'm thinking, you know, I've got to talk to my wife about this. I wonder if she does that. And we've never had that conversation. We've talked about a lot of issues around that we're discussing today, but I've never talked to her about how she puts her keys in her hand. And I said to you before, we've got a tiny little black Cocker Spaniel. I'm not buying a Doberman just so I can exercise. So I don't think this is something everybody does. If you are in an area where you do not feel safe, and you are a man and you're walking in some of these areas, I'm sure you relate to some of these problems. But again, we come back and I'm sure we'll discuss it today. Statistically, largely, this is something affecting women in our society, and it's being perpetrated by men on women in our society. And until those statistics change, you can say what about all you like on our text line, but it doesn't change just what's happening on our streets.
Fiona's in Ballarat. Morning, Fiona.
Good morning. How are you?
Really well. How are you? I mean, gosh, Ballarat, when we talk about collective trauma and some of the changes that women are making and men are making, of course, but how are you going at the moment?
Look, I've decided to be intentional in this situation because I am a self-defence instructor and I've put on a free program for all the women in Ballarat to help them to deal with what has happened in our city. I'm very passionate about what goes on, and so I'm not looking at being reactionary to one person's choice in life, whatever you want to call it. I'm actually going to use this situation to figure out how do we become purposeful and prepared in our society. So I'm very driven, very mindful and very intentional about what I can do to make a difference because of this situation that's happened here.
How many people turned up to take your class, Fiona?
Well, it's going to happen on Tuesday next week. And I've got, currently, I've got over 90 people. I had 100 tickets and over 90 are coming. The conversations that I'm having with women during this time is I realise that there is a really, how would I say, it's a very intense situation for everyone there. I know people who are specifically not leaving their house because they're too scared to go on the street. I know people who have been followed and don't know what to do. And there's a constant conversation that's going on in many, many different women's groups because of what's going on. So I know it's had a huge impact.
We're going to have a chat to another woman who specialises in martial arts and self-defence and for years has been helping work with women and women who have been been victims of violence and trauma as well. Fiona, what about the argument of, well, it gives you a false sense of security, that self-defence isn't something that women should think about as a way to keep themselves safe because, you know, you're going to go out and do something thinking, oh, well, I can take this person on?
Look, there's evidence to say, I look at it as a bushfire. It's doing all the things that I can to be prepared, but realising what I'm capable of in a moment. There's, yes, not a false sense of security, but giving yourself the best opportunity to be able to do something to actually maybe change the tables in your area. So this is why we go to schools, this is why we practice in life, this is where we build habits and everything to look at how do we become better and better in ourselves so that we feel more confident. But that doesn't mean we can control everything. So I am very proactive about, okay, if I'm going to go out on the street, looking at how I can do it where I can become safer. So I know as a martial artist and I know how to knock people out and break their legs and do all of that sort of stuff. But I'm also proactive where I will go for a walk and I may go for a walk in a group of people rather than on my own. I don't put earphones in my ear so that I lose a sensory experience of the world that could actually help me in a situation. So it's not being complete. I'm being very mindful of my words, because everything that we speak will actually take on as a truth. And so I'm very careful about how I say things. But this is, what can I do in this situation rather than feeling helpless with not knowing what to do?
So, Fiona, if people are in Ballarat and they want to come along on Tuesday, how do they go about it?
Look, there's lots of places where there's... I've got a QR code on my Facebook page, but you can look up Eventbrite and look for self-defence classes there, and you'll actually be able to hit the QR code and then book. It is run, and I have put extra tickets in there, but the facility has only got a certain amount. If there is a need, I can create another one. I can create another event, because you know when you know something and you've got the ability to share it, but people don't know that it exists?
Well, it's...
what I want to do.
And we never know what to do, do we? I mean, it's why so many of us lay flowers. We know it's not going to actually do anything, but you just feel hopeless.
Mm. It's community grief in the case of flowers, right? But you want to feel like you can do something or be part of something in times of great tragedy, and also in times of difficulty for a community. You see it so much in whether it be in a city or in a regional community at times of tragedy as well. Let's go to Barb at Clunes.
Look, I wanted to say that, I'm 65, for all the years that I've lived on the earth, I think I've been always mindful of all those things that were mentioned before about where you walk, who you talk to, what you dress in, waving at someone or not waving at someone, walking on a different side of the road to, you know, construction sites or whatever. And for me, I feel very strongly it's about culture, it's about men calling men out when anything along that continuum from disrespect through to fatality occurs. It's men calling men out. It's men tackling their own behaviour. I don't know.
Barb, you raise a really interesting point then, because that's one of the things I had down on the list today to talk about. It's like, what do we mean when we say we expect men to step up? Like, what does that look like? What does that look like in your mind?
In my mind, it means if you, I know there's been advertising on the television, etc., around this, but if a bloke says something derogatory about a woman, whoever it is, whether they're related to them or not, it's up to men around that man to say, listen, number
Call
one, why have you done this? Number two, it's not acceptable. And number three, do you know what this is? It's disrespect.
Absolutely, Barb, and calling it out, and I know you and I spoke about this. There's heaps of stuff, right, that men are doing and good men are doing, and just behaviour that has changed. So it might be where you were saying, well, if it's dark and I'm walking behind a woman, I'll deliberately cross the road and walk on the other side of the road. I know my husband will pick up the phone and call me and just have a really light-hearted conversation so that the woman in front of him knows or gets an idea that she's safe. So when we talk about tactics and Band-Aid solutions, there are things that great men all around Victoria are already doing to give us signals of it's okay.
Mm. Well, provided they understand the complexity of the issue and they're interested in supporting women, I do think that's actually part of it. And one of the things that we know from an evidence-based research perspective is that intervening with young boys and young men is a really key part of this. So we have to think about how we invest in understanding where that disrespect comes from and where those imbalances and I think a sense of entitlement comes from. That is where the investment needs to be.
So, yes, big changes need to happen, but in the short term, what Band-Aid solutions are we using? What works and what doesn't? This, a small can of hairspray. I carry it when I'm on the train at night and when I'm walking to my car. And another that says, I'm a single woman. This is now my fourth German Shepherd living alone in Ivanhoe. I've experienced near misses walking home from train stations and in the evening. I feel confident now walking alone with my Shepherd as he gives me the security, especially in the early mornings before sunrise. It's something that I do, unfortunately. sadly, this is just how it is. So they are band-aid solutions, but from taking up self-defence to personal alarms to even the debate around whether or not women should legally be allowed to carry capsicum spray, what are you considering and what are you doing and do you think it helps?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker and on AM radio.
This is the Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Good morning, Rochelle Hunt and Warwick Long with you. Nicole Calms is in the studio as well, Associate Professor in the Department of Design and Founding Director of Monash University's XYX Lab, which looks at national and international research in gender and place. But looking at those band-aid solutions that women are using to try and keep themselves or to at least feel safe from personal alarms, the amount of women that are texting in saying they've got a dog. I mean, this would be no surprise to you, Nicole. It's what your research has shown. But, you know, I'm surprised just the sheer amount of women that are doing that.
And it's a lot of it is actually about, was raised just a moment ago, about wanting to exercise at dusk and in the evenings. And so this is a key part. Women are working, they're busy, they want to feel well. And the purchasing of dogs allows them to get out into the world and feel like they can occupy public space.
Just wanting to be healthier, which is what we've had a myriad of other programs on as well. And, yeah, the barrier to entry for women in parts of our state is they need to have a dog to do that to feel safe, which is mind-blowing. Let's bring in Manny, 1300 222 774. Hi, Manny.
Yeah, hi, guys. Yeah, I was just it's a huge topic, obviously. We need to talk about a lot of things. But essentially, it falls onto men and the way we're educated. I'm of the opinion that we need to make men feel that they're not worthless, that we need to make men have some self-respect. Because if a man has no self-respect, he's not going to respect anybody else.
And that's
in these things, because, you know, harassment happens even in the Parliament House.
Hmm.
Like, so these people were raised into a proper environment, right? But so what chance do we have if people are raised into a degenerate environment?
Really good to hear from you, Manny. And that's the thing. We know that fundamentally it is respect. It starts right from the very beginning, you know, sort of pre-kinder, pre-school. But meanwhile, alongside that, these band-aid solutions that we're using, how much do they help and how much do they hinder? There's been a lot of discussion already around self-defence and whether or not self-defence works. I know in the 90s, a lot of just different organisations that I was involved with or worked with, it was very common, right, for the workplace to offer, I'm trying to think if it was everyone, if it was just women. I think it was just women, free self-defence classes. It was very common. I did quite a few of them. And I'm just wondering whether that is something that even would be socially acceptable today? Like what sort of image that would have if a workplace said, look, we're going to offer all the women free self-defence classes. What sort of reaction do you think people would have to that?
Well, I know from some of the institutions that we work with, the rhetoric is around, and I think it's an important one that we should talk about, that women should not be responsible for safety. This is men's issue and that's how we should address it. And so when you're kind of suggesting that women do self-defence or they change their behaviour, etc., then you're kind of making the burden of their safety theirs, and it's incredibly problematic. But also what we're talking about today is the fact that there's a tension because women want to have agency and feel safe, and so there are things that nonetheless they do to help them feel like they can occupy public space in a way that does it, that reduces their vulnerability.
And it's so disappointing that's the case, but let's see if there's a heightened look at it right now. Tracy McCurdy is a facilitator, women's defence, self-defence and occupational violence prevention training at the Australian Trauma Support Centre, based regionally in Victoria in Bendigo. Tracy, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Is there more interest in self-defence training when there are high-profile violence against women cases?
Yes, I just started a new program this week and I had quite a large increase in inquiries over the last few weeks with what's been happening in our communities and in our world. Most of the women that do complete my program have unfortunately experienced violence and aggression against them in the past and are looking to prevent that from occurring again in the future.
Is it easy to tell what age, demographic of women that are ringing you, Tracy, to sort of get And to be to equip themselves with some form of self-defence?
It ranges, women as young as, you know, in their teens all the way through to women in their 50s, you know, wanting to complete the program and wanting to feel like they've at least, you know, got some skills to equip themselves to keep themselves safe. But I think for me, the most important part of the program is not necessarily the self-defense techniques that I teach people, but the situational awareness that accompanies that, you know, all of the things that you guys have been talking about over the last, you know, 15, 20 minutes around. Having more awareness of what's happening around us and not putting ourselves in situations that, you know, are potentially unsafe, and looking at the data, knowing that, you know, 78% of cases, the perpetrator of violence against women is someone they know.
I couldn't agree more. I did, as I said, I was given an opportunity to do self-defence within a work environment years ago in the 90s, Tracy, and I'm a small woman, you know. I'm 5'2" and weigh around 50 kilos, so there's not much I could do if there was someone twice my size coming at me. But one thing I was told that has stuck with me was that if you feel frightened, threatened, or you feel like you're being followed, find the nearest person that you can, whether it be a shop or if it's somebody else walking past. So I was pretty much convinced that I was being followed. I was really scared. I was really frightened. It was only about 6:30 at night, dead of winter, so it's pitch black. It was still a relatively built-up area. It was in the inner north, but I pretty quickly figured that I was being followed and then there was no one around me. But then sort of out of nowhere, this small young woman came towards me, smaller than me, probably younger than me, and I remembered that training. And I walked up to her and I said to her, "Can you just stand here and talk to me for a moment, please? I'm being followed and I don't know what to do." And she said, "Sure, no thing, no problem." And we stood there and she looked and we spoke for a little while, and then she said, "Okay, he's just turned around and he's just left." Then the two of us kind of protected each other. We got ourselves onto the tram and made sure that we were both okay. But in that instant, Tracy, I knew what to do. And it was about social, it was kind of about environmental awareness. There was no way, if this guy had grabbed me, I was a goner, right? Because he was huge. But I was able to pick up on that environment prior, and I was able to put into place something that I had been taught, and it has stuck with me forever, Tracy.
And that instructor did an amazing job. And I tell the women that complete my program the exact same thing. I hope that they never have to use the self-defense techniques that I teach them, because hopefully their situational awareness is to a level that they don't put themselves in that situation, and they trust, you know, their instincts that says that they're not safe, and they remove themselves as early as they can, you know. And I think knowing, like I said, that most of the perpetrators are someone that we know and often someone that we love or that we care about. You know, I talk a lot to women about setting boundaries early, not accepting behaviour that makes them feel uncomfortable. You know, all of those things are part of situational awareness, you know, and looking to prevent violence and aggression against women.
And I know, Tracy, people listening to this, and because it's so important and because it is at the heart of who we are, language and how we talk about things matters so much. And you can already see it on our text line, Rochelle. You can see it with callers so far today. But Tracy, what strikes me is I'd imagine if a police officer during a high profile case came out
and
talked about women's situational awareness, it would be headlines and everyone would be jumping down their throat. And so can we talk about why that matters, either Tracy or Nicole?
It's exactly what I was thinking. And I wonder how and why it's different when women talk about these things as opposed to a male, you know, police officer kind of suggesting the same thing. Look, I don't know. I think one of the things, though, that's I think really important for us to talk about is the amount of times women don't speak back to this kind of behaviour because they're afraid that it will escalate. And that's actually one of the problems that we have, is that when we're not speaking back to sexual harassment, not being able to challenge someone who is stalking us because of the, you know, physical imbalance, but also the general power imbalance in society, then somehow it continues, and that sense of entitlement continues. So I do think there is, again, a real tension between what women want to do to feel safe, and maybe that is having a situational awareness, and then some of the other tensions that are created in the ways we talk about this issue.
Yeah, and I agree. You know, I don't think it's women's responsibility to prevent attacks against women. You know, I think the only people who are responsible to prevent violence against women are those who perpetrate those crimes. You know, but unfortunately, it still happens. And, you know, I want women to, and often the self-defense techniques that we teach women just give them the confidence to be able to have a voice and to be able to, you know, set boundaries and feel confident in themselves, and so that they're not putting themselves in those situations.
You know what I find fascinating is that technique that I use that I, to this day, hand on heart, swear, saved me. It was a workplace and it was a free workplace training session that gave me that information. But I agree with you, Nicole, in that I don't think workplaces would feel confident to put them on at the moment. I don't know how you, I mean, is this something, are you getting workplaces, Tracy, that are?
Yes.
You are. Okay. I'm just wondering if there's going to be a swing back. Okay.
I have a number of workplaces in different industries that are seeking training for their staff, particularly health services, community service sectors, disability sectors, real estate agents. We're going into people's homes to undertake property inspections and feeling unsafe in those environments. So there's quite a lot of demand for occupational violence prevention. You know, that training is not necessarily, that's not focused around self-defense techniques. It's more focused around recognizing the early signs of violence and aggression, what we can do to de-escalate, you know, how we can work to try and de-escalate someone, and also how we can reduce the impact on ourselves after incidents like those. You know, but there is some practical elements around how we can, you know, keep a safe distance and how we position ourselves in a space and things like that that we can also look at.
Tracy McCurdy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Facilitator, Women's Self-Defence and Occupational Violence Prevention Training at the Australian Trauma Support Centre based in Bendigo, speaking to you there. There's a text here, Rochelle, that says, I understand the reason for this conversation and the logic behind it, but I find it infuriating. Why can't we focus on raising boys better? That's Jane in Ballarat. And look, we 100%. Acknowledge that at the start, right? We're talking small things and changes that people are making and looking at knowledge sharing, but this is a problem largely perpetrated by men against women, and there is very much that is very much the heart of the issue, and men need to do
absolutely better. And we said that at the beginning, but in the meantime we're being sold all of these tips and techniques and things to use to keep yourself and to potentially keep yourself safer, or at least feeling safer. This says, I'm 47 years old and I still use my year 9 self-defense classes. We all have those little things that you think about and that you remember. Another says, my daughter regularly goes to the shops and might get an item or two for us, say bread or milk. We have our safety plan and we've had it in for ages. Bite, kick, knee in the nuts, scream, run and run home. But don't run home, run to the nearest corner, to a 7-Eleven store. We discuss it's easier to get into lit up areas and places with cameras. That's from Caroline as well. Having those plans and those techniques in place, it's just a reality.
It is a reality, and we know that women and girls are acculturated into thinking about safety, and women share those their own experiences, but then also help their daughters to stay safe in a variety of ways. And why wouldn't they? I mean, we do it with our sons as well, let's face it, but I think that there's a particularity around girls that we need to kind of that women are thinking about all the time.
Fran is in Forest Hill. Fran, welcome to the program. What would you like to add?
Well, firstly, I'd just love to say that this is such an important topic, and physical safety should just be a given, whether you're a man, a woman, a child, and it breaks my heart that it's not. But I just wanted to share a story also about professional and psychological safety, because 3 or 4 years ago, I was on an advisory board, and there was probably, you know, 80% men, 20% women, and one particular man chose to be very disrespectful towards me, to which I've spent a long time in my professional career in male-dominated environments, so I'm very good at speaking up for myself. Not many women are. So I spoke up for myself and told him that was highly inappropriate and that I expected an apology. And nobody really said anything else, but both the chair of the meeting, who was a man, and two of the other men, who I would describe as, you know, very aware, self-aware men, rang me afterwards and apologised for not standing up to him at the time.
That sounds a bit weak.
And how did you feel about that, Fran?
Well,
so they knew, right?
I feel fine in advocating for myself, but I know that there's not a lot of women who do. But I was just grateful that on reflection, they understood that they were in the wrong, that they understood and they felt shameful that they had not stood up to him, and that it had been left to me to do that.
Do you think next time they would do something differently, though, Fran? Because maybe you needed that support at the time, right?
Well, I did, but it didn't happen. And so if you think about how behaviour changes, we don't suddenly go from behaving one way to behaving another way. We have to become aware.
Yeah.
And then that awareness often happens after the fact. And then we become aware during. So I just saw that as progress, that now these men were equipped with that experience to stand up next time.
I like the idea of it is progress, and hopefully they will stand up next time. And if nothing else, Fran, it will give you the confidence to continue to stand up for yourself as well. So many texts on this. I stopped running about 10 years ago when my children were little because I couldn't bear the thought of them waiting for me to return, and to the idea that something might have happened to me. I know I made the right decision because nothing has changed, says Deb in Port Melbourne. Jane, who's in Ballarat, who rang through before, she sent us a message. She says, me again. Perhaps while the women are doing self-defence classes, maybe others, men included, can do anger management classes as well. But that's the thing, right? It comes down to education, and it comes down to having that support and security around you. Bianca Feilborn is an Associate Professor of Criminology, Social and Political Sciences at the University of Melbourne. And right at the beginning, Bianca, Nicole mentioned public transport. And I was on the train just the other day, and I started, it was the middle of the day, I felt really safe and secure. And I started looking at what alarms were or weren't in the carriage and what they did or didn't connect to. So when it comes to something like public safety and public transport, Bianca, where are we at with giving women tools to use on public transport?
Yeah, it's a great question. So we do know, unfortunately, that public transport can be a real hotspot for a wide range of kind of sexual harassment and other forms of antisocial behaviour. So there definitely are some mechanisms that have been put in place. I think one of the key things would be the Victoria Police Stop It reporting hotline. And we have seen some campaigns around things like bystander intervention, for example. But I think that there are still some real questions around how effective some of these response mechanisms are. So, you know, for something like a reporting hotline, well, what action is actually taken? You know, what support is there in the moment? Unfortunately, often still not very much. It's certainly something that's come up in my own research on harassment in public spaces. You know, participants have often said, I really want, you know, tram conductors to come back, for example, so that there's an authority figure or someone I can turn to if I'm feeling unsafe or uncomfortable.
I know that there'll be lots of women that would choose not to get on a train, but they get on a tram or a bus because you can just sit near the driver. When we look at infrastructure, these are places where we can make direct changes. Can I just ask, Bianca, those little alarms on the trains near the doors, who do they connect to? Do you know?
No, I'm not really sure. I believe that they would connect to
the driver,
the police or the driver, who can then take further action. But I think it's a really good question. I'm not 100% sure.
One of the things we do know, and XYX, I use a lot of Bianca's research, but one of the things that we discovered in the public transport research that we've done is that women don't use any kind of alarm. They're just not something that they want to use. It draws attention to them. And also, as Bianca's just said, with those stop it kind of text message yeah. things, there's 24 hours later at the earliest that you would have a response. So it's nothing immediate about it. So I think that they're not... They might be mechanisms, but we do need to think about how gender sensitive they are.
Be helpful in that it would be a recording if all of a sudden there was data to show there was a particular area of concern, so you would then know where to put more resources, maybe more PSOs or whatever it is. But yeah, it's not going to help you in the actual moment, is it?
When you're feeling unsafe, right? Yeah. Like that's it. Bianca, do you know the idea of personal sort of alarms or alarms on train? Do they work? Do they help women in these situations?
No, I don't think that there's any strong evidence that they work. And I think in a lot of cases, particularly for what we might think of as kind of lower level harassment, as Nicole's just said, women don't use them. You know, I think people often think unless the most extreme form of violence is happening to me, that, you know, I'm not going to be believed, I'm not going to be taken seriously. Sometimes it can actually take weeks or months to process what has happened and to realize, oh, maybe that was something that I could have reported or you know, could have done or said something about. So no, unfortunately, there's not really any evidence that they're effective.
A Victorian MP has just come out recently saying it was shut down pretty quickly, and it's probably not the first time this has been thrown around for debate, but they had said that women should legally be allowed to carry pepper spray to be able, I think in America it might be called mace, you know, capsicum spray. I have to say, right, if it was available in a small can, would I carry it in my handbag depending on what time I walked back and from work or went out or whatever it may be? I reckon I would, but I don't know whether that's a smart thing to do or not. Bianca, how do you feel? I mean, pepper spray, it's a weapon. It hasn't been, it's not anything that is going to be made legal anytime soon, but you can buy lots of illegal things on the internet, let's face facts, right?
Oh, and actually this is a TikTok trend already saying, hey, if we can't carry this, these are the legal items you can carry
in
spray.
I had a woman in Texas say I carry hairspray.
Yeah, yeah, it's already a discussion. Yeah.
So what? How do you feel about things like pepper spray, Bianca, or substitutes for?
Look, I think ultimately, look, I tend to take the position that women should do whatever they need to feel safe in public spaces. But things like pepper spray are ultimately not going to prevent or to solve the issue. Perhaps it will enable individual women to feel a bit safer in public spaces, but it's not necessarily going to change the drivers of violence against women, which we know are things like gendered inequality, having really rigid ideas around gender, for example. The other issue is that even if we have something like pepper spray available, we know it's incredibly common for survivors to freeze in the moment or to have a fawn response. So it's no guarantee that you'll actually feel able to draw on it if something were to happen. The other concern is that it could lead to women being held responsible. Mm. You know, you had pepper spray. Why didn't you use it? Why didn't you fight back? So I would be really concerned about, you know, the potential for negative ramifications for women as well.
And I think it's also that's the moment where something has escalated. And I think the really important piece that we miss is the fact that a lot of the sexist harassment is invisible and anonymous. It is like the stalking, which is very hard to prosecute. It's the what most of society would deem as kind of harmless forms of sexist harassment, which then actually is where this behaviour thrives and makes it very normalised to keep to harass women in, and to sexually assault them. I mean, it's a spectrum of this kind of violence.
Where we have seen, I think, change and conversation change is around bystander behaviour. We saw it with Bondi. There's a text here that says the train alarm didn't connect for us. A man on a train became randomly violent. A bystander hour of the alarm, the train stopped between stations over the PA, reportedly said to wait for emergency. They were waiting for it to be connected for minutes. Thank goodness for a few guys who called out the situation and restrained him. How much, Bianca, do we rely on bystanders stepping in and the role and the importance of bystander behaviour and then the fear and the repercussions that's associated with that?
Yeah, it's a good question. So unfortunately, we know that bystander intervention actually isn't that common. Again, in my own research, you know, people who've experienced harassment in public spaces said it was, you know, quite rare. They'd experienced much more harassment than bystander intervention. That said, I do think that bystanders have a potentially really important role to play. again, particularly for those more, fleeting or ambiguous or minor forms of harassment, where it's very, very difficult to have other forms of, say, a criminal legal response, to have a bystander step in the moment and say, I saw what happened. I'm not okay with that. As a community, we don't condone your actions. That can be really powerful. It was certainly also really important for people who'd experienced harassment. It could make them feel really validated. Often women were very unsure about, was this a big deal? Am I just imagining it? So again, to have someone else validate that that was a harmful experience could be really important. At the same time, there are some significant concerns for bystander safety. So it's not always safe to go and confront a perpetrator, for example. That can actually escalate the situation. It can result in the bystander being abused or assaulted. Unfortunately, I've come across numerous examples of that in my own work. So I think bystander safety always has to be put at the forefront. It's also about recognising that there's lots of different strategies that we can use as bystanders. So it doesn't necessarily mean, sweeping in to confront the perpetrator. It can be smaller actions like alerting someone in a position of authority. Mm. It might be checking in with the victim survivor after the incident. It could be creating a distraction, oh, hi, Sarah, I haven't seen you for yeah. years. I'm going to come over and have a chat. So some of those subtle strategies can actually be really effective.
That is really interesting information, Bianca Feilborn. Thank you so much for joining us on the program today.
No problems. Thank you.
Associate Professor of Criminology, Social and Political Sciences at the Melbourne University. I don't think there's the V in there, but that's neither here nor there. Let's bring in Dr. Lauren Pearson, now Research Fellow and Equity Lead within the Sustainable Mobility and Safety Research Group in the School of Public Health and Preventative Medicine at Monash University. Welcome to the program. You've undoubtedly been listening to a lot of this. What are we missing in your mind, or what should we be discussing that we may not be discussing in depth enough yet?
Yeah, absolutely. So historically, very much in transport planning, we've mostly been looking at the trips that women are currently taking on the modes that they're currently using. So thinking about, walking, making sure that that's safe enough for women to be able to do properly, and also taking buses, using other forms of public transport. And there's been a bit of a perspective that ride a bike. So our bike riding statistics look at about 30% of trips are made by women. And there's kind of been a perspective of like, okay, why are we going to push them to do something they don't want to do? But, and that makes sense at face value, but we've actually looked at this and our research has found that 77% of women actually want to ride a bike. This is something they want to be doing for their everyday trips, but very, very much limited by the infrastructure that's not suitable for their needs and for the kind of trips that they need to take as
well. So what sort of infrastructure, and I dare say, Lauren, that you've probably worked very closely with Nicole on this, because when we talk about Band-Aids, there's the small little round ones, then there's the big heavy-duty Band-Aids, right, that can actually really hold things in place until you get to a doctor. And when we talk about infrastructure and lighting or whatever it may be, they feel like the big heavy-duty Band-Aids that could help. What sort of infrastructure works, Lauren?
Yeah, so I'd say the big heavy-duty things are things like our protected bike lanes. And you would think at face value, again, that this isn't really something that's going to potentially protect women in a personal safety way, more so in a risk of injury way. But it also does because it limits them from having to rely on things like our bike paths and routes that often detour through parks and along coasts where we know that lighting is switched off after hours if it's available at all, and there's often a bit of a lack of that natural surveillance as well. So things like these protected bike lanes, these also really help women make everyday trips by bike because you've got that natural surveillance of other people around as well.
And I think also with bikes and other forms of active mobility, they actually prevent women from waiting for public transport. And so this is actually a really interesting project that Lauren's doing, where we're really starting to see how we can facilitate that agency of women using their own form of transport, which prevents them from relying on that kind of...
And buses would be a big issue there. So a lot of the outer suburbs where there's no trains or trams, you're relying on buses. Quite often there is no bus stop. You are just standing on the side of the road in the dark. And the buses, never run to time. Mm. And they can, you can be sometimes waiting for 20 plus minutes.
Yeah, it's a real problem.
Exactly right. And this is actually one of the really big opportunities where e-bikes come into play as well, because we know that more women have this concern about their physical fitness and ability to get out of situations where they might not feel safe while having to also rely on how fit they are to get out of that. So we know that e-bikes have this potential role to overcome some of those concerns, which is a really interesting interplay.
And you want to know that you've got a safe or a bike path that is protected, like you were just saying, that to get you out of that situation as well. So it is amazing how all of these conversations, Rochelle, that we've had over the years link up to make a safer environment and something that we probably haven't thought of. Dr. Lauren Pearson, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Nicole Carms, Associate Professor in the Department of Design and Founding Director of the Monash University XYX Lab, which does a lot of national and international research in gender and place, has been with us today. Nicole, obviously a lot of problems we've been discussing today. Is there anything that gives you hope? What gives you hope in this space?
Look, I think there is a real, you know, from my disciplinary perspective in urban design, I think there is a turn towards thinking about how we invest in gender-sensitive design practices. And I think that there is some amazing work done that's really starting to link up domestic family and violence with the violence perpetrated against women in public space to understand that that kind of spectrum. But what needs to happen is more funding to deal with violence against women. That's where it all is.
You know what gives me hope is, like, the majority of us are good people and we're looking out for each other and we want to live in safe communities. There's a text here from Stephanie and it says, I will never forget being on an almost empty train carriage when a man was just staring me down. I felt quite threatened by a much older woman came by, sat by me and told me quietly that her husband would meet us at the train platform, that she'd seen this person intimidating me. I was forever grateful for that person just stepping in, and now as an older woman, I am that person for many other women. Mm. So that one action has then for generations changed that woman's behaviour in helping other people. And the fact is we are looking out for each other and we all do want to live in safe and happy communities. And I think that that bystander mentality, I think the fact that we've discussed this today at length and that we will continue to discuss it, and that organisations and universities like yours, Nicole, are doing that work. So, yeah, I love catching up with you, but I also hate catching up with you.
Exactly.
Nicole Carms, Associate Professor in the Department of Design and Founding Director of the Monash University's XYX Lab. I'll be back with you on Monday. Don't forget, the Conversation Hour is a podcast.